Terra 2, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 18.
We think in human terms and assign our human limitations to life as a whole, but in creation life cycles can be shorter than the blink of an eye or as long as eternity. Immortality doesn't have to be larger than life, it may come in the smallest, most unassuming forms to challenge our assumptions and keep us humble. We found life on Terra 2, not intelligent life, at least not in the way we understand it, but immortal life. The beings we disturbed by settling here live their endless existence on a square foot of dirt, the entire population, the whole life of the planet. What divine modesty it is for an eternal to exist in this boundless universe of ours and only carve a minuscule corner for itself, content to live there anonymously forever.
Do you know what this is? Asked Seth. Sarah was staring incredulously at the beanstalk in front of her. Half of the leaves were turning a delightful shade of purple, looking otherwise healthy in every way. She didn't know what prompted the change and was preparing to harvest a fistful of leaves and take them to the lab to take a closer look. Solomon, who never left Sarah's side and was of course present at the scene, stood up, stretched his back and brushed against Seth's leg, making the latter slightly uncomfortable. She wasn't too keen on displays of affection, not even the feline kind. Solomon purred, looked her straight in the eyes, and started chewing on a purple bean leaf. Sarah tried to stop him, but by the time she picked him up, the cat had already swallowed the leaf and was licking his lips to clean off the last drop of the purple juice oozing out of the crushed foliage. I hope whatever this is, it's not poisonous, Sarah said, and picked up the cat, somewhat concerned. Solomon purred with delight, in a much better mood than anyone ever saw him. He started stretching and patting gently at Sarah's arms, then shuffled a little bit to be set free and disappeared under a broad cabbage leaf. Sarah looked around to see if there were more purple-leaved beans, but couldn't see any. The dirt that mounded around the base of the bean plant was tinted the same intense color, as if somebody tried to color the bean on purpose by pouring indigo ink around its root. Do you think someone did this on purpose? Asked Seth, unconvinced. I can't even guess what it is, said Sarah, scooping up a handful of dirt and picking a few more leaves to take back to the lab. By the time she got in front of a microscope, her hands were stained with purple juice in a very intense and slightly iridescent hue. The cellular structure of the bean leaf was completely ordinary, but looked as if it were dyed on purpose, like the hydrangea flowers Sarah used to experiment on when she was in school to shift their color from pink to green or blue. The chromoplasts of the cells were producing large quantities of anthocyanins, the same component that stained the dry beans a deep purple, almost black, no doubt in response to the stress of growing under the light of two suns. Sarah didn't realize how much the light intensity differed from the one on Earth. The coffee-slash-caramel sky diffused and subdued it, masking its effects. First she made a mental note to let everyone know they should wear sunscreen, then she looked closer at the substance. The plant made so much of it that it seeped out into the ground around its roots. The strangest thing was that there was only one plant. Why that plant and not the other ones? There was no explanation she could find, really, so she was about to throw in the towel and tend to her other duties. She got up from the microscope and turned around, only to see Seth standing in the doorway and waiting with uncharacteristic patience for the findings. So, what is it? Anthocyanins, we need to wear sunscreen, the plant is protecting itself from extreme light intensity. Why only this plant and not the others? Came the unavoidable question. Of course Sarah knew, the moment she saw the leader leaning on the door jamb, that she wasn't going to get away with leaving this issue unresolved. If there was something certain beside the proverbial death and taxes, was Seth's thoroughness about getting to the bottom of a problem. She stuck with it until it was clarified, analyzed, and archived. There was absolutely no way that Sarah would have any peace until she figured out why the one plant turned purple while all the other ones were still green. You can take some time figuring this out, there is no rush until the cows arrive. Moments like this made Sarah question her sanity. There was something about a cow transport arriving at light speed in combination with strangely colored foliage that tore a rift in the fabric of normalcy, even on this odd planet. Now? Sarah asked. Yes, is there something else more important you have to do? Sarah knew that the only acceptable answer to this question was no, so she turned to the microscope to take a second look and noticed that the chromoplasts had moved noticeably from their previous location. She increased the magnification by a factor of 1,000 and got confronted by a huge pair of black eyes, round and beady like those of a lobster. The creature moved quickly, and Sarah rushed to adjust the microscope so she could see it better. There was an entire colony of them, building microscopic hives on the inner surface of the chromoplast, working in concerted fashion like an ant colony or a beehive, diligently catalyzing the plant's processing of sugar, purple sugar to be precise. Where did they come from, Sarah thought, and what were they eating before the plants got here? There was nothing on the planet's surface that they could metabolize, nothing organic, anyway. Sarah increased the magnification again, to atomic level. Great, she thought, I get to witness the digestive processes of a microscopic bug. Inside the microorganism, boron atoms combined with sugars, moving them around like a miniature transit station towards the cell membranes, strengthening them, feeding them, a flawless symbiotic system. Fascinated, she watched the matter distribution for a while, thinking that the little bugs must think they have gone to heaven themselves, given how much easier it was for them to process the boron already refined and made soluble by the plant's metabolic processes. Life, of course. How come they didn't think about it? Life on this planet made perfect sense, life at such a different scale that it existed outside of their grasp, like humans ignore the gigantic energetic processes of a supernova. The question of the singular plant still remained unanswered, but Sarah was tired and her hands were still purple from the bean juice, and she had a crick in her neck due to tense concentration. She decided to take up the challenge again in the morning and went to bed, exhausted. The next morning she went and checked the entire bean patch and all the other plantings. There was no purple foliage among them or markings on the ground, no purple at all. Nor did the purple phenomenon extend to other plants as years passed. For once a question remained unanswered, despite effort and frustration, one of those things in life that were beyond human control. The sisters made many assumptions and tested many theories, none of which panned out. Sarah's personal opinion was that the microscopic inhabitants that turned the plant purple were the entire population of the planet, and since the conditions inside their little milk and honey host were so good they never dreamed of leaving. Seth judged the hypothesis and found it preposterous, but since she couldn't come up with a better explanation, she left the whole thing alone. The unique bean plant with leaves half green half purple never died, it grew larger and its stem turned into a woody trunk, thicker than an arm. In time, the sisters built an entire support system around it to protect this curiosity of nature and offer sanctuary to the gracious hosts that shared their planet with them. When many years passed and Solomon was still with them, the sisters started wondering what wonderful properties this tree of life possessed, but none of them dared to try and eat the leaves, not out of fear that they would be poisoned, but out of respect for the life, even microscopic, that had no choice but to accept their imposition, oblivious settlers that they were. Sarah quietly wondered if any of the juice was absorbed through her skin, since it took more than a week for the purple coloring to subside, but never talked about this, and felt guilty for the damage she caused the immortal microscopic colony before she knew better. She wondered if life inside the purple leaves was more advantageous for the little bugs than life inside her own body, and questioned if there was enough boron in her own metabolic process to support their existence. She was sure she had a few Terra 2 natives running through her veins, hard at work in cellular repair, restoring parts of her to the original, optimal design. Three living hosts resided on Terra 2, three gigantic cities for the immortal natives of the planet, Sarah, Solomon, and the bean plant. Two of them accepted their new role without reason, as the natural order of things. For Sarah, the role of carrying this alien life inside her for the rest of her years became a sacred duty, and she got a lot more aware of the need for her body to stay healthy and strong, so that the being she accidentally took upon herself could continue their existence in comfort and peace. The sisters teased Sarah for a while after she became a they, always addressing her in the plural and making sure that her guests would not be unduly stressed by the performance of her daily chores. Sister Joseph commented that it served her right, after mulling so much bacterial muck, to have to provide more decent accommodations to her work.